All right. We'll begin. Parashas Tetzaveh. Parashas Tetzaveh deals, in its first half, it deals with the special garments that were worn by the Kohanim. There were 8 special garments that had to be worn by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and the Kohen Hedyot, the regular priest, wore 4 garments. These were uniforms that had to be worn when one did the service in the Beit HaMikdash. In the event that a Kohen did any of this work without wearing the special garment, this uniform, the work that he did, the sacrifices that he brought, are puzzle. No good. They are part of God's army, and God's army has uniforms. And a great deal is going to be said about these uniforms. And there's a great deal to be learned from some of the details of these uniforms. I'm going to take you through a number of the psukim, because we're going to focus on a few of the special garments. Where it says, number one, Ve'elah HaBegodim, the underlined sentences, Ve'elah HaBegodim, these are the vestments, the garments. Ve'elah HaBegodim Asher Yasu, that they shall make, Choshen, Ve'efod, Umeil, Uktonet, Tashbeitz, Mitznefet, Ve'avnet. These are the garments that are to be worn by the Kohen Gadol. The Choshen. Choshen was a breastplate. We're going to be talking about the Choshen. The ephod was a kind of apron. For lack of a better word, this was that's the word that Rashi uses to describe it. But it's an apron that came around the back, not around the front. It was, of course, very ornate. The choshen, the ephod, the me'il, is a robe. Uktonet tashbeitz, a shirt that was made in a very beautiful way. Mitznefet, a hat. Avnet, a gartel, a sash. And there's going to be another one that we will learn about soon. And these holy garments shall be made for your brother Aaron and for his brothers, for his sons. No, Aaron achicha, Aaron your brother, Ulavanov, and his sons, so that they may serve me. Now, the next place where we have sentences that are underlined, and it says on the side, Shohem stones. V'lokachtet shtei avnei shoham. You shall take 2 shoham stones. They were very, very precious stones, and they were like epaulets on the shoulder straps of the ephod. The ephod, we said, was a kind of what an apron. A kind of apron that was worn. It had straps. It came around the back. On the top of the straps over here, there was a shoham stone embedded up here and one up here. Well, it would have been easier if I'd used these hands here. One here and one here. Like Yaakov. I just thought of Yaakov. And you have to take these 2 avnei shoham upitachta aleihem shmot bnei Yisrael, and you should engrave upon them the names of the children of Israel. Shisha mishmotam al heaven achat, 6 of their names on one stone. Vet shmot hashisha hanotarim al haeven hashenit, and the other 6 on the other Shoham's stone on the other shoulder, Kitol Dotam, and they were written in the order of their birth. That means two stones, 12 names, six on one, six on the other. This is not the only time that the names of the tribes are going to appear on the vestments of the Kohen Gadol. All right, we're going further. The next place where it's on the line says, where do you put these two stones? V'samta shtei harvanim, and you should place the two stones on the shoulder straps of the ephod. Avnei zikaron, these are stones of commemoration or memory, that God remembered stones for the children of Israel. The Nosa Aaron et Shmotam Aaron, she carried their names lifnei Hashem before God, al shtei ktefav, on his two shoulders, lezikaron. Somebody there has a picture. You know, we are living in the day and age of audio-visual age. I should have thought of it, but even if you can't see it too well, say you see it. You know, here it is. These are the two shoulder straps. These are two shoulder straps. This is the apron, which is worn along the back. And here, on the two shoulders, are the Avnei Shoham. Okay? Yes.
I just had a thought that he carries them on his shoulders, but I think it's a symbol of his carrying the responsibility for God Israel.
That's very nice. That is very nice. And let's see where we're going to go with it. Okay? I'll hold this. I may need it for another few moments. Let's go. Now, the second, so we've talked about the Shoham stones. The Shoham stones that are on the Kitfot HaEphod, the shoulder straps of the Ephod. Now, I have written over there Choshen Mishpat. Fasita Choshen Mishpat, Masa Choshev, Kimase Ephod Tarasena. You shall make a breastplate of judgment. That's what they call the Choshen Mishpat. The Choshen Mishpat was a box like that hung on the chest by the heart of the Kohen Gadol. It was a square. Now we're going to see that this square had 12 stones in it. Now what do you do with 12 stones? With 12 stones you have a stone for each tribe. The names of each one of the tribes were engraved. No, I didn't use the right word. Not engraved. Well, let's see. What does the pasuk say? The pasuk is going to tell us the 12 different stones. They're four columns of three. It's supposed to be square, kaful, folded over. It was like this, and then folded over like this. In the middle of this fold, the Kohen Gadol put a piece of cloth, parchment, with the name of God on it. Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's right in here. We're going to see what the purpose of the Choshen was. Because the name of God is going to appear on another one of the garments of the Kohen Gadol, and we're going to learn that in a moment. There was the tzitz. The tzitz was a plate of gold that he wore along his brow that said on it, Kodesh Lashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. All right, let's go back over here. Yeah, where it's on the. So then we have the four rows: Arbor, Turim, Evan, Odem, Pitado, Bereket, Nofer, Sapir, Yahalom, Leshem, Shvo, Vachlomo, Tarshish, Shoham, the Yoshpei. Shoham again. The 11th stone was Shoham, and Yoshpei was the 12th. By the way, Shoham was for the tribe of Yosef, and Yashpeh was for Binyamin. And the, I believe it's the Medrash that says that the stone called Yashpeh was Binyamin's, because Yashpeh stands for Yeshpeh. He has a mouth. Binyamin has a mouth. And Binyamin knew what the brothers had done to Yosef. And he never revealed it to his father. Well, let's see if there'll be significance. Then where it's underlined, it says, V'avonim tiyen oshmos b'nei Yisrael, these stones shall be according to the names of the children of Israel. Shteim esrei al shemotam, 12 stones, 12 names. Pituchei chotam, engraved like a signet ring, ish al shmo tiyeno l'shnei osa, shevet for each one of the 12 tribes. All right, so we learned about the Shoham stones that are on the shoulder straps of the ephod. We've learned about the Choshen Mishpat, the breastplate that has 12 stones. Now we'll turn over. And the continuation of the Choshen is at the top, the Nosa Aaron. Aaron should carry at Shmod B'nei Yisrael, the Choshen HaMishpat. Aaron should carry the names of the children of Israel on the breastplate of judgment, al libo, on his heart. Bevo oil HaKodesh, when he comes into the Bet HaMikdash, lizikaron lifnei Hashem tamid, it should be a constant remembrance of the Jewish people for God. The Notata El Choshen HaMishpat, into the Choshen HaMishpat, you should place the Urim and the Tumim. That piece of parchment with the name of God, when put into the folds of the Choshen, became the Urim V'Tumim. Urim V'Tumim means that was the means by which messages were given to the Jewish people, and I'll explain in a moment, but it was messages that were given through light, Urim, and Tumim, the message was a complete message, which means the following. There are a number of places in Tanakh, and it says it later on in Torah, when the king or the leader of the Jewish people is going to need information. He's going to need information. Do we go to war or don't we go to war? E'ele o lo e'ele. Shall I go up to war or not? If I go to war, will I be victorious or not? How are these decisions made? We know, of course, what can happen when these decisions have to be made by mere mortals, and especially mere mortals that don't have the brains to make these kind of decisions. But we had a foolproof system. There was an Urim V'Tumim. The king would stand in the presence of the Kohen Gadol, who had the breastplate, and shall we go up to war or shall we not go up to war? And letters on the these 12 stones would begin to light up. A yud? No. An ayin, a lamed, and a hey. And then he'd have to read it and understand that it means alay, go up, go against them. Then it could have been an answer of, will we win or will we not win? So then it would be either Tinatseyacho, lo tinatseyacho, and the letters would light up, but you had to be able to read them correctly as well. Chazal say that Eli HaKohen, when he saw Chana, and he, why did he think she was drunk? Says because he asked the Choshen Mishpat, and the letters that came up were a hey, a reish, a shin, and a chaf. So he put them together as shin, chaf, reish, hey, shikora. But that's not how he was supposed to put it together. That's why she tells him that you don't have Ruach HaKodesh, she says to him. Because he should have read it as Chof Shin Reish Hey Kisara. This woman is like Sara. Or Kishera. Isha Kshera. And he read it jumbled as Shikora. So the breastplate and the Urim V'Tumim, the letters lit up. They gave a complete message and at extremely significant and important junctures in Jewish life, they would consult the Urim V'Tumim. The famous Gemara in the Sechta Brachos, where the Gemara says that the leaders of the Jewish people would come into David HaMelech and they would tell him, listen, Amcho Yisrael Tzrichim Panasa, the Jewish people need Panasa. So he says, listen, go be mefarnes one another, each one of you take care of them. And then they said, listen, it's not enough. Not enough. We need... So his response was, L'chu pishtu yedeichem begdud. Go out to war. By the way, you always have to understand, Jews never ever went out to war just because they needed parnasa. Because watch, you'll see the process that they had, David HaMelech had to go through before he can go out to war. It meant that, you know, there may have been nations around that were causing a great deal of anguish to the Jewish people. Not always did they go out to war. There were times that they would wait until an opportune moment and then go out to the attack. I don't think they waited for 7 years worth of kasams until they decided to go out and do something. But before David HaMelech could go out to war, miyad nimlochin b'sanhedrin, it has to pass the Sanhedrin. Understand? Yoatzim b'achitofel, you have to ask the advice of Achitofel. You want to see the process that one must go through. And after you've gone, you have to ask the Navi, you have to ask advice of Achitofel, you have to get a Sanhedrin of 71 to vote. And then a Sanhedrin of 71 have to vote by majority rule. It's not easy to move those rabbis to give the order to go out to war. And then, even after all of that was done, there was still veto power, because the Gemara says he had to ask the Urim V'Tumim. He had to stand before Aviatar HaKohen and ask, and it could be that Sanhedrin will have passed it, and Achitofel says it's a great idea, and Benoyahu Ben Yehoyada, in charge of the army, and Yoav and Tzruya, they're all ready to go, and then the Urim V'Tumim will say no. So there was never any kind of a frivolous going out to war. It was always serious business. So that's the Urim V'Tumim. V'hoyu alev Aaron, and it shall be on the heart of Aaron, b'vor lifnei Hashem, when he comes before God. V'nosa Aaron is mishmat b'nei Yisrael alibo lifnei Hashem tamid. Like, there are a number of words that are repeated over here. Tamid. It has to be alibo, it has to be at his heart. It has to be before God constantly. The third garment that we have to talk about is the tzitz. You see where it says tzitz? V'asisa tzitz zahav tahar. And you shall make a head plate of pure gold. U'pitachta olav pituchei chotam. Here you have to write on it, Kodesh Lashem, Kodesh Lashem. The last pasuk there is V'hoy al metzach Aaron. It should be on Aaron's forehead. V'nosa Aaron es avon hakodoshim. Aaron shall carry the sin of the holiness. We'll describe that in a moment. Asher yakdishu b'nei Yisrael l'chol matnos kodshem, the sacred offerings that the children of Israel consecrate for any gifts of their sacred offerings, and it shall be on his head, forehead. Always, again, tamid, to bring them favor before Hashem. All right. Now I have to decide where I'm going to begin. So maybe I'll begin. The two Shoham stones, six names on one, six names on the other. The Choshen Mishpat, 12 stones. Each tribe has its own stone. What's the significance of it all? What's the meaning? Why isn't one enough? What happens if they just have the two stones with six names and six names? So you have the names ready. What happens if we just have the Choshen Mishpat with the 12 names? So you have the 12 names. Why do you need the 12 names here and the 12 names here? Why do you need the 12 names here and the 12 names and the 12 names there? So obviously there has to be a message that's involved over here. The Jewish people became a nation via 12 tribes. Now the fact is that they come into Eretz Yisrael, or for that matter, they go out of Mitzrayim through the desert. They are going to be 12 tribes. Each tribe has its own prince. Each tribe has its own flag. Each tribe has its own camp. The 12 tribes are divided into four camps of three each. The land is going to be divided, Eretz Yisrael is going to be divided into 12 portions. Now, there's something good about this and something not so good about it. At some point, and in some way, they're going to have to be forged into one people. You can't have 12 tribes with their own interests and their own agenda and turn this into a Klal Yisrael. Mi ka'am cho Yisrael, goy echod ba'aretz, who is like your people, Israel, one nation in the land. The famous Zohar that says, ba'aretz, in the land, inun echod, they are one. Otherwise, they're not one. So I saw somebody who says the following. I disagree with it a bit, but how do you turn 12 separate and distinct families into one united, homogeneous people? There are two ways to do it. One way to do it is by legislation. As of today, as you stand at the foothills of Sinai, today, as you enter into Eretz Israel, remember, there's a covenant that's entered into at Sinai, an Arvot Moav, Atem Nitzovim Hayom Kulchem, you are all standing today, everybody, men, women, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, Mechote Beitzechov, Atshoe Veimecho, from the wood chopper to the water carrier, you're all standing here together, and you are entering a covenant of the Jewish people with God. But even then, they still crossed as 12 tribes. By the way, as they crossed the Yam Suf, the Medrash says that the Red Sea divided into 12 separate highways, and each one of the tribes went on a different one. So you can turn them all into one by legislating. As of now, no more tribes. There's another way to do it. The other way to do it is let time be that which is going to bring about the union of a Jewish people into one. The fact is, legislation would be the worst way to do it, because legislation is something that would leave a residue of so much anger. We're being coerced into being a people. God didn't want that. On the breastplate there are 12 separate stones on the breastplate. Here there are another 12 names. the symbolic message over here is the following, and I believe that this is the important thing. As far as shouldering the responsibility of Klal Yisrael, you're already joined together. You're not 12 separate. You're 6 and 6, you're really 12 altogether. In other words, it means from the moment that they go out of Mitzrayim, in terms of the fate of the Jewish people, you're all in the same boat. You all carry the same fate. You all have a similar destiny. You may all get there in different ways, but this you have to understand. Klal Yisrael, if Klal Yisrael is in danger, everybody goes out. It's not a matter of, well, Reuven is in danger, let Reuven take care of himself. Shimon is in danger? No, no. There are certain, the process of turning them into one Jewish, united people is something that has to take time. But there are things that can't wait for time. And that is anything that relates to the safety and the security of the Jewish people as of now, immediately, you are one. In terms of the tribal divisions, so here I really hold that there was never to be a complete fusion and union of all the 12 tribes. As a people, they were supposed to become one, but each one, each tribe had its own unique contribution to make. We weren't all clones. God didn't want 600,000 men and all the women and children all to be just all the same. Doesn't want all the same. The beauty of a symphony is not 100 violins. It has to be 100 violins with all sorts of other voices and sounds together create the symphony that is the life of a people. Mehera yibane amigdash, the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and there will be a Kohen Gadol, and he will have a Choshen with 12 stones and 12 names. But haven't we become one people during all of these thousands of years? The country, the land, is going to be divided again into 12 tribes. The halacha is, when will Shemitah and Yovel, according to the Rambam, Shemitah and Yovel will become Min HaTorah again? Not only when all Jews come back over here, but each tribe knows where its place is. Because there has to be unity in diversity. God doesn't want everybody all the same. There even, I think, the Zohar says that there were 12 nuschaot ha-tfilah. There were 12 different nuschaot of davening. I mean, we're left with Ashkenaz, Svard, Ari, Chabad, I don't know, maybe Breslev, or somebody else has another nuschaot ha-tfilah. But there were 12 nuschaot ha-tfilah. Each tribe had something unique to contribute. The fact is that both Moshe and Yaakov, in their blessings of the tribes, they point out each one's unique contribution. Each one has a certain talent that the others don't have. The unity, what I'm saying is that even the Choshen, all of them on one breastplate, with a Shem Hashem in there, that's also the ultimate form of unity. 12 that equal one, where each one contributes from their own talent and their own greatness into this pot that makes up a Klal Yisrael. There's no such thing as uniform, homogeneous, all the same, all the same. I don't know if it is even some beautiful, something beautiful about Burichatu, Baruchata, Boruchoto, I mean, all of the various sounds, all of the various colors. What would happen if we would just, you know, we'd all dress the same, we'd all look the same, it would be very boring. You come into a besmedrish, you understand, there are bekishes and kapotes and guys that gain ungetin courts with short jackets, there are black hats, there are kipots rugot, some of them are sprinkling, you know, here and there. The tapestry of a Jewish people has to be made up by this, the brilliance and the colors of the 12 tribes. Each one had something unique. One of the big mistakes of our of this country was the attempt in the 50s and the 60s to melt everybody together. It was a tragic, tragic mistake. In the process, what they did nearly was destroy the uniqueness of Moroccan Jewry, Iraqi Jewry, a whole world of minhagim and beauty. And no, everybody's going to be a ratata Israeli. You understand? Yes, in terms of the army and protecting the country, everybody's won. That's the kitfot heifod. But in terms of lifestyle, there are so many beautiful menhagim that, you know, you can live in America your whole life and not come into contact with Sephardi Jewry and different segments of Sephardi Jewry. You wouldn't know the beauty of all of these communities. Even their manner of dress, the manner in which they speak, the songs that they sing, the piyutim that they wrote, the shidot zmidot v'tishbachot. We were at a convention this past Shabbos. A few hundred rabbis got together to solve the problems of the Jewish people. I don't know why you're laughing, you understand? Any problems that you have now are new ones that started since the convention ended Sunday morning. So we're already getting, you know, in half a year from now we'll get together to solve those problems as well. But it was beautiful. We were sitting at the next table to us, there were a bunch of Sephardi rabbis. Boy, were they singing songs. Mordechai ben David never heard them. Shweki wouldn't know what's going on. It was so many different... It's such a tapestry of menhagim and songs and the manner of conduct and how they David. It was really, it's really very, very beautiful. You know, you can live your whole life in Har Nof, you know, and not know too much either. You have to get out sometimes and see that there's a world out there. The Choshen Mishpat represented the unique contribution of each one of the tribes. And that unique contribution becomes part of the makeup of the Jewish people when there's a Shem Hashem in the folds of the Choshen. The two stones up here represent a people who join together in carrying the responsibility for all of Klal Yisrael. They're the one. Now, there's another fascinating thing. According to most of the Rishonim, one thing is sure. The Choshen could not be engraved. It says, B'milu Otam, the stones had to remain complete. How do you engrave names and the stones remain complete? How do you do that? So the Gemara says, this is where Shlomo HaMelech had to use that very special little creature called the Shamir. The Shamir was something that sort of split. It was a little creepy critter that you made a line and it would just go along the line, and it split open, and nothing was lacking. In other words, so all of the names were engraved, so to speak, by the Shamir. The names up here, could be engraved in the way in which one normally engraves, which means that there are pieces that will come out. I think the significance of that over here is that each one of those stones with the name of each one of those tribes is something beautiful in its fullness, and nothing should be subtracted from it, because each one of the tribes had a unique and very special spiritual and cultural contribution to make the Klal Yisrael. There was another time at which they had to become one. They come into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yoshua. It takes over 300 years until the first king is established. First king is appointed. Shmuel appoints Shaul. And what is it that causes Shmuel to appoint Shaul? When the people turn to him and they say, Simo Aleinu Melech, place a king upon us. A form of government is something that has to come from the people. During 250, 300 years, there were judges. The period of the Shoftim was really a period in which, from time to time, a number of tribes would join together in order to protect themselves or in order to capture some of their territory. But they were never united as a people. Dvorah, in her great song, complains that Reuven didn't come to the aid of the Jewish people and there were others who didn't come. There was no one central authority. They weren't ready for it yet. When they come to Shmuel and they say, Simo Aleinu Melech, place upon us a king. So the fact is, what they wanted was good. But they should have wanted a king as God is the one who wants it to be. They shouldn't have said, Simo Aleinu Melech, give us a king, l'shafteinu, to judge us, k'chol ha'goyim, like all the nations of the world. Fashlugin, all the nations of the world. We have to have a king who's going to represent Malchus Shamayim, the kingdom of heaven, here on earth. Why does it happen then? Because the time is coming for something else. Construction of the Beit HaMikdash. If there would still be tribal loyalties that divide them, how will they ever decide where to build that Beit HaMikdash? Everyone would say, I want the Beit HaMikdash, my tribe. But once under Shaul they become one people, and then David establishes a kingdom in which all become loyal to him, then we can fulfill the pasuk that it says that and it shall come to pass when God will come to the place that he will choose, Hamakom asher yivchar, the place that he will choose, Mikol shvotecha, from amongst all of your tribes, he's going to choose one place, and nobody is going to question it, because they have already been forged and formed into a united people, each one with their own unique and separate talents. Let's talk for a moment about the tzitz and the choshen. We talked about the two places where you have the names of the 12 tribes. But we also have two places where the name of Hashem appears. The two places are the Choshen, into which the folds of the Choshen, that's where Moshe Rabbeinu, the Kohen Gadol, Aaron, placed this cloth with the name of God. And then the head plate that sits, that says on it, Kodesh Lashem. So there's a very, very famous word of the of Rav Soloveitchik. This is 60 years ago, 1940. Wait a minute, 40 is 67. I think it was approximately 1940. It was a hesped. Some of the Rav's greatest stuff was hespedim. Some of his hespedim were absolutely, his eulogies were masterful. So here was his eulogy on the person who till the beginning of the Second World War was the leading scholar in Torah scholar in Europe. That was Rav Chaim Eizer Grodzensky. Rav Chaim Eizer was the Rav of Vilna, and he was the one to whom all eyes were turned in matters of halacha, and for that matter in with regard to leadership in all sorts of things that involved Klal Yisrael. Reb Chaim Weizer was probably one of the last who had that power and that ability and that stature. Reb Chaim Weizer. So the Rav Chaim Weizer died just as the war was about to begin. I mean, I don't think the Germans had not yet come into Lithuania or to Estonia or Latvia. They had already entered Poland, but Reb Chaim Weizer passed away. So in his eulogy, he said the following: there are two garments of the Kohen Gadol that are both mentioned in Torah as being something that is lizikaron, a remembrance before God constantly of the Jewish people: the tzitz and the choshen. Tzitz and choshen. The tzitz, so we learned the pasuk of sisat tzitz zahav, you should make a tzitz of zahav tohar, you should make this head plate, and on it it said Kodesh Lashem, but the pasuk also points out what it was for. It was for avon, the sin. It shall be on Aaron's forehead so that Aaron shall bring forgiveness for a sin regarding the sacred offerings that the children of Israel consecrate. What it means is the following: this was a source of forgiveness in the event that any sacrifice intentionally or unintentionally was brought and was tamei, had become defiled in one way or another. That was a terrible thing, but the halacha was that the tzitz, the Kohen had the tzitz, the head plate on, that became the source of forgiveness before God. That means the tzitz represented something of an extremely important religious nature. A religious nature that dealt with the manner of sacrifice and service of God. The choshen, Aaron shall carry the breastplate upon him. Now, we already started talking about what it was that the breastplate was that which you consulted when there was a matter of great significance, a decision that had to be made by the Jewish people, by the king who represents the Jewish people. Those decisions, you went to the Kohen and stood before the Kohen Gadol as he wears the Choshen, and you asked the questions. The letters lit up, and then the Kohen had to have the Ruach HaKodesh to be able to read those letters correctly. By the way, just in passing, there's a great deal of discussion both in Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi, the names of the 12 tribes don't have a tzaddik, a chet, or a kuf. Those three letters don't exist. They don't, and I think a tet does. A tet, that's four letters. 22 letters in the alphabet, four of them don't appear. So the Gemara says that on the in addition to the names of the tribes, they also engraved along the 12 stones Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Now Yitzchak, of course, has already three of the letters that we need. So why couldn't we just put in Yitzchak, you understand? No. The Avos are one unit. You can't just put Yitzchak and leave out Avram and Yaakov. So you had to write Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And we're still left without a tet. So the Yerushalmi says there are three approaches. Either they also wrote, engraved someplace down at the bottom, Shivtei Yisrael. Is that a street in this city? Yeah. Shivtei Yisrael. Shivtei, tribes of Israel. That's what the Choshen had. So now you have a test. So the fact is, now you have all of the letters that you need, so that whatever question is going to arise, you know, what happens if it's a question, even though that's not the kind of question you ask, is it Tomei or Tor? You know, they have to, you'd need a tet. So it was Shiftei Yisrael. Or Shiftei Yeshurun is another opinion. And the Rambam has his own opinion that it was Shiftei Yud-Hei. Because all you needed was the tes. So you didn't have to, you know, throw all sorts of additional letters there. Anyway, the Choshen and the Tzitz, each one had their specific tasks. The Tzitz was that which was a source of forgiveness if something had been brought in the Beit HaMikdash that was not Tohor. The Tzitz was completely Kodesh, absolute, sanctified before God. The Tzitz was on the forehead of the Kohen. Where was it? It was by the center of intellect and mind. What about the Choshen? I think three times it said the Choshen was Alev Aaron, by the heart of Aaron. The Choshen had to be Alev Aaron Tamid, constantly. The Lev Aaron represents the love and admiration for the Jewish people. Avas Yisrael comes from the Lev of Aaron. Who are the ones that bless the Jewish people? The Kohanim. And what's the bracha? The Choshen is Alev Aaron. All of the tribes are engraved there. But what's it called? It's called Choshen Mishpat. Matters of judgment. Not matters of intellect. Not spiritual matters. Matters of Mishpat have to be decided by the Choshen. It may have to do with war, with the economy. Should I attack that enemy or shall I not attack? Will I be victorious? Won't I be victorious? Has the time arrived that I should speak out against that enemy of Israel or that enemy of Israel? Do I remain silent? Do I bide my time? I mean, these are major decisions that Klal Yisrael is in the process constantly of they should be making, and they may not be making it. You had the Choshen, you stood before the Kohen Gadol, and you asked. You had a problem, you didn't know how to decide it, or if you had an idea how to decide it, but you wanted to be certain, then that's what you did. God, if we would have a Choshen Mishpat today, it would be overworked. Overworked. I can put together a list of questions to be asked now. You know, terrified. But you're terrified. They're holding Gilad Shalit over us. If we do this or we do that, he's dead. How do you pass a shayla like this? Rebated the Alma Kula. Jewish children are losing their limbs in Sderot. What are we supposed to do? It's a dilemma. It's a real dilemma. And they can keep holding this over us forever. It's unbelievable. We're in such a bind. You had a Choshen Mishpat, you were able to ask these questions. Rav even wrote in over here, he wrote in, should I make an open demonstration? Should I make a demonstration against this or that shaming of the Jewish people? This must have been 39, 40, you understand. There must have been those who were calling for mass meetings. Something has to be done about European Jewry. Oh boy, these were difficult questions. And what about the years of... there was a raging debate in the Jewish community whether to march for Soviet Jewry. March for Soviet Jewry. There were those who were opposed, but oh, were they opposed to it. And they said that every time you can march over here on Fifth Avenue on Solidarity Sunday, but do you know how much they're suffering over there in the gulag because you're marching over here with your kids and your baby carriages, and for you it's a big day on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. You know what's going on over there? And then there was the other, so we should remain silent? So we should remain silent. Let them just go ahead and do whatever they want. I mean, in the final analysis, it turns out that they said, oh, was that felt? Oh, did those demonstrations ultimately brought down the Soviet Union? But at the time, who knows? I mean, I was present at raging debates between those who said, the Rebbe said no, the Hashiva said no. Some Yingalechov's triple SJ student struggle for Soviet Jewry. I even remember, triple SJ, because those Yingalechs say you should go out and demonstrate, that's why you're going to go out and demonstrate. I'm afraid the Yingalech were right. The Choshen, you asked of the Choshen the question, how was the Jew to conduct himself in the marketplace? What face is he to present to the world at large? You know where those answers came from? From the Choshen that was on the lathe, the heart of Aaron. The heart of Aaron was a heart that was pained and suffered for Klal Yisrael. That's where the decisions came. That Choshen with that lathe. And who did it? Who made those decisions? That same Kohen, who not only had a Choshen on, but that Kohen also had the tzitz, the head plate. In other words, the one who was the posek. The Kohen was Yoru Mishpatecho LeYakov VeToratcha LeYisrael. They are the ones who are to teach Torah to the Jewish people. The Kohen was proverbially, and according to the Tanakh, he was the Moreh Tzedek. He was the one who had to teach Torah to the Jewish people. So we're talking about a Kohen, the Aaron, who wears both the tzitz by his intellect, the Choshen by his heart. He's the one, that Kohen, who is full of Ahavat Yisrael, is the one that can also pass kishailas in osur or mutter, tomei or tohar, chayav and potter. The great intellectual is also the one of great heart. That Kohen who has the tzitz hakodesh, the one who knows halacha and hagada, he was also the one that represented the Jewish people before the nations of the world. And here the Rav comes to the point that he wants to make. And it's a point that's extremely important in our days as well. Something has changed in Jewish life, and most probably it started changing about 100 years ago. And we're totally unaware of the fact that this change has taken place. But within the folds of what the Rav is writing, I see it over there. It takes us back. Who are the leaders of the Jewish people for 1,000 years in Poland? Who are the outstanding figures? The outstanding figures were the Rabbonim, the Admorim, the Rebbes. Those were the figures. They were the ones who spoke on behalf of the Jewish people, whether it had to be to the Tsar or whoever else it was. There were great meetings of Rabbonim that used to take place in St. Petersburg. It was always St. Petersburg then, before it became Leningrad, and before it became St. Petersburg again. The great conventions of Rabbonim at which problems of the Jewish people were dealt with, it was Rabbonim and Poskim and Gaonim. Reb Yitzchok Elchanan was not only the great posek of the Jewish people, he was the leader. Now, I'm not sure, here I may be talking out of turn, but it was certainly sometime in the 19th century that there were new forces that came to the fore in Jewish life. There was the Haskalah, there was the Enlightenment, there was the secular Zionist movement, and new people moved into the fore to take over positions of leadership. It wasn't the Herzls and the Yusishkins and the rest who represented Jewish people until the latter half of the 19th century. We don't even remember that anymore. We don't even remember a time at which, yes, Arav with his bekisha, his frack, and his black hat is the one who was ushered into the office of the prime minister. He's the one who dealt with government on behalf of the Jewish people. But no, what came was a whole new movement, and we're at the latter end of that movement. Rabbis, your place is in the base medrash. We're the ones. You're not the ones who are capable of dealing with these issues. We are the ones. What are you talking about? That hasn't taken place over the last 20 years here in this country, and especially since Oslo? Rabbis, you can't. No politicization. Religion and politics don't mix. No, no. You stay in your base medrash. You can even say tillim if you want to, but you can't express opinions on matters of state. That's a complete rejection of what Klal Yisrael was always supposed to be. The Kohen Gadol who had the tzitz, the head plate, the posek, the Talmud Chacham. He was the one who made the decisions that came from the heart. Ah, here the Rav says, I'll give you a moment. Here the Rav says that only a head that is full of Torah, can have a lave that is really Male Avas Yisrael. If the head is completely empty of Jewish values and Jewish thought and Jewish ideas, it's not going to have the kind of heart that is necessary. The tragedy of this all is that Rabbonim having been relegated to a position in which they are not the leaders of the community, I think they may have lost. They may have lost the ability to indeed do it. There may be those who have lost the ability. I think it's something that we may have to learn all over again. But the Rav said that Chaim Eizer was the one who wore the tzitz and the choshen. A head full of Torah, therefore was a heart that was full of Avat Yisrael. It doesn't work any other way. There cannot be Avat Yisrael without Kedushat Yisrael. No Avat Yisrael. There can't be a choshen without a tzitz. If you will, the closest example of it is tefillin that are on the hand, which is near the heart, and tefillin shel rosh that is on the head. The Rav says the two of them have to go together. If they don't go together, something is going to suffer very badly. Okay, that's it. What did you want to say? A little louder. The position of the king? Ah, but wait a minute. Wait a minute. Good. But you have to understand, the halacha is the Kohen does not answer a question through the Choshen unless it's placed to him by the Melech. Va'amad, it's going to say later in Torah, Va'amad, the Melech has to stand in the presence of the Kohen and ask the question. In other words, the one who's going to have to carry out the answer afterwards is going to be the king. And by the way, you also mentioned something else that's important. The king also had to have two Sifrei Torah. One that he had on his arm constantly, and then one that he took out with him when he went out into the world. That the Torah had to keep going with him. Yes, I'll be with you in a moment. Go ahead. Then they didn't go. You're right. I'm trying to think of an example in Tanakh. David asked whether he should go to a certain place in Eretz Yisrael, and God told him, yeah. And then he asked him, I think it was Anshei Ke'ilo, Anshei Zif, will they betray me to Shaul? And God said, yes, they're going to betray you. You should know, you're going to have to find some place there, you have to get away from here. But you have to be very careful there, because they're going to betray you. So that you can have both answers, and then the king, or whoever is asking, has to be able to make the decision based on that. There is some element of decision that's still made by man. How to go about everything. As I quoted the Gemara, you had to ask the Sanhedrin, you needed Achitophel the Yoetz, you needed Yoav ben Tzruah the commander-in-chief. It was never, ever God totally. That's another thing that's important. The tzitz and the choshen represent, the ephod represented that Jews have to carry responsibility for their actions. Nothing that will come from the choshen is ever going to be accomplished unless we are ready to go do the job. As I saw somebody who wrote, the Chavishim makes a miracle of rabbim, the many, into the hands of the few. What happens if there are no few out there? We have to be the few that are going to go out into battle. Otherwise, God can't bring any miracle that he wants. So that the, this is another idea that I'm saying about the kitfot, the shoulders, that we have to go out and do the job. Whatever the Choshen says will not be fulfilled unless we're out there doing what has to be done. Okay.